Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back.
You're listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. Good evening, everybody. Welcome once again to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious, Lynn Nickerson. Hey.
Hello, Willie.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing just absolutely wonderfully.
Super.
Super. Super wonderfully.
Yep. I bet you had a very interesting weekend.
I bet I did. Interesting is an understatement for sure.
Willie went on a little ghost hunt, actually two of them.
A couple of little ghost hunts, yeah. I went to the famous, well, actually it's the Dandy House in Hinsdale, New York.
The Dandy House.
That's actually the name of it, although everybody refers to it as the Hinsdale House.
Well, Dandy referring to what, like a speakeasy or just a family name?
I believe the name of one of the families that...
Family name,
I believe
okay.
That's it, yeah.
Any other places, Rolling Hills?
Yeah, and then we went to Rolling Hills Asylum, and it was quite a weekend.
Well, good.
Have to talk about that some night.
Yeah. Discussion night.
Discussion night, yeah. But hey, tonight...
We're going to explore the Mothman.
Yes, tonight on Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. This week, we welcome to the show Robin Pyatt Bellamy. Robin is an American now living in Toronto, a married mom to three adult children. She has been a genealogist for over 50 years and also teaches beginner and intermediate family historians. In addition, she conducts research into things that are considered paranormal or supernatural, things such as tonight's subject, the Mothman. She has been a consultant for films and published media. Robin is a longtime contributor to several yearly conferences on such subjects as Mothman, ghost research, and forensic evidence collection and assessment in paranormal research. Welcome to Spirit Radio, Robin Pyatt Bellamy. Good evening, Robin.
Hey, Robin. Welcome.
How are you?
Doing great.
We're doing good. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, you're a genealogist and an author, which I didn't realize, and then you're, you know, I think we can call you an expert on Mothman.
Oh, I've been called a lot of things, so that's probably one of the nicer ones.
I think that's really a nice thing, yeah. Well, let me see. Since our audience, you know, it's been a while since you've been on. I think it's been over a year.
It's so, actually been a while since I've been on any show. I battled cancer and then was in a car wreck and just really haven't had time for much else.
Ooh.
My goodness, how are you feeling from the car wreck?
Well, it's one day at a time. This is only the second show I've done since.
Really?
Yeah, it's been slow getting back to it.
Are you walking okay?
With assistance. I have a rollator that I use when I'm going any long distance, but most of the time I'm okay.
Well, we're glad you're back into the swing of things, but I'm sure it isn't pain-free.
Yeah. Oh no! Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah. Oh gosh!
Glad to hear you're on the right track, on the mend, anyways.
Yeah, and that cancer thing is looking really good for you now.
Oh yeah, no problems in that direction.
Wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
Wonderful. Well, why don't you sit down and take it easy and just talk?
Okay.
Well, I don't think people realize this, but you were born in Ravenswood, West Virginia, which isn't far from Point Pleasant. So you want to give us a little bit of your background and then mention your sighting?
Sure. I was actually born in Point Pleasant. We didn't have any hospitals in Jackson County at the time.
Oh, I see.
That's how old I am.
I was going to get to that in a minute.
I was about, probably 6-7 years old, and we were traveling south out of town, and I looked over, and there was what I thought at the time was a deep-sea diver type thing with the black suit and the tanks. But that didn't make any sense, because I was by the Ohio River. But at that time, I didn't know anything about Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward a whole bunch of years I'd rather not count. And I started working in cryptozoology, and I thought, this is kind of interesting. So I read John Keel's book and started doing some research, and I'm pretty sure now what I saw was actually Mothman.
Ooh. Okay, so you were in a car, but what was Mothman doing? Was it flying or in a tree or what?
No, he was standing on the ground between the Ohio River and a railroad track.
Oh, did he have wings? Could
he
you
had
see
something.
Wings?
Behind his back, and they were folded up. They weren't extended. So I can't really guarantee that it was wings. But, I'm certain it wasn't tanks like I thought. Because tanks aren't pointed, I know.
Yeah. So did this happen before or after Point Pleasant? It must have been before, right? The bridge collapse?
Actually, I think it was... close to the same time, because I would have been, I was born in 61, so I would have been...
Okay. Yeah, with 68, 6...
And that's when it was going on, so either at the same time or right after.
Boy, that's bizarre. Have you necessarily been psychic all your life, Robin?
I don't know if I would say psychic. I've always had...
Intuitive? Sensitive?
Instinct.
What was that? Yeah.
I've always had gut instinct.
Oh, gut instinct, yes.
And sometimes I'll dream things, which is a little unnerving.
Yeah.
But it's not anything I can control or have regularly, thank goodness.
It just kind of comes miscellaneously to you and you get information from strange means, right?
Yeah.
Or dreams.
Yeah, usually it's about either airplane crashes or dead bodies.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it's really not pleasant at all.
Hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, moving on to the Silver Bridge collapse, which happened on December 16, 1967. Can you tell us what led up to that as far as the sightings are concerned?
Well, the biggest bulk of the sightings started about maybe a year and a half before the bridge fell.
Mm-hmm.
Started with two couples. They were, adults. They were out having some social time and not drinking or doing drugs, and they're just not the type.
Mm-hmm.
And they were chased by this thing.
Chased by it?
And they were going 100 miles an hour down the road, and it was keeping up with them.
Oh.
And they went to the sheriff's department, and there was a big investigation. But then as time progressed, more and more people saw it. And the people in the town started having... precognitive things. They started seeing more UFOs, although the area has always been kind of a UFO center.
Really?
So it might be that they were just noticing it more because of the weirdness going on.
Okay.
It was very odd. And then to have this bridge collapse was just... There is a perfectly natural explanation for the bridge collapse.
Yeah.
I don't personally think that Mothman had anything to do with that.
No, I think he was just a precursor. It was like a portent, an omen.
A lot of people think that. I'm not sure where I stand on that particular subject.
Okay.
He does tend to show up before major disasters, but he also tends to show up when nothing else is happening. So, you know, I don't know whether it's coincidence or what's going on.
So you can't blame him for everything, then.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, he's been showing up at some of the really big events, like when Chernobyl melted down. There were reports of Mothman being seen in the 3 or 4 days before that happened.
Well, are the Russians aware of his existence?
I don't know. I know most in England are, most in India are. So depending on what the Russians allow their people to know,
yeah,
you know, I'm certain that somebody would have said something.
Well, where did the reports about Chernobyl come from, or the precursory sighting?
Well, that's a good question. I know that they were originally written in Russian, and we had to have them translated, so it had to be.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it had to be somebody who was familiar, so yeah, I guess they would know.
All right, then. I know you know you're of a scientific mind, but, you know, Ken Gerhardt has written about flying humanoids and man-birds and what else, gargoyles and winged creatures. So that's pretty much the name of his book. Now, he doesn't commit himself to saying exactly what this is, but what do you feel this is, this Mothman creature?
I believed it was biological.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the sightings in Ken's book are Mothman.
In where?
A lot of the angel sightings from, you know, biblical times, I think, may also be Mothman. Not all of them, but some of them, I think, surely fit the pattern.
Well, they're not usually described angels as having red eyes, though, or being dark.
True.
But there is supposed to have been some kind of humanoid bird creature that was known to Earth.
Yes.
So it's hard trying to decipher exactly what that was. Is this an aberration of it?
Well, and you have to remember, too, that people will only identify what they can process in their mind.
That's right, and close to their experience.
Right. You know, we saw that a lot when Christopher Columbus first came to the New World.
Mm-hmm.
There were reports about him coming that were so fantastical, they, of course, could not possibly have been true. But that's because the locals had no clue what this white man was.
Okay, yeah. If you don't have a context and you're just getting raw information, it's hard to put it in context.
Exactly.
Okay, so he was also sighted in England in 1976, and then you say Lawndale, Illinois in 1977.
The Lawndale issue was a really, really interesting story because the child actually was picked up by these birds.
Really?
And there were two of them. It wasn't a single... whatever.
Well, an abduction, maybe?
Oh, yeah, he wasn't carried very far. I mean, I would imagine he would have been, you know, rather difficult to carry. And there were witnesses. I mean, it wasn't that he made this story up and told Mom.
Well, what is the story, then? What happened?
Apparently, he and a friend were just out playing, and these two great big birds swooped down and picked him up.
Have there been explanations about maybe it being like a thunderbird or a very large eagle? I mean, how large was this child? How old was he?
I'm not entirely sure how old he was. I know he was, you know, old enough to carry a conversation. And there was originally, a lot of people did think it was thunderbirds. In fact, many still do. And it was certainly bigger than any kind of owl anybody has ever seen. Which is fun. Another funny thing about Mothman, the West Virginia University came down to investigate, and they said Mothman was a sandhill crane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We do have sandhill cranes. They're not abundant, but we do have them. And they do have red spots on their head that could have been mistaken for eyes,
mm-hmm.
but they're only 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would confuse that for 8 feet tall.
Yeah, and aren't they white cranes?
Yes. Well, yeah. They have different colors, but...
And they certainly flap their wings when they fly, and Mothman doesn't do that.
What about rings?
Birds flap their wings.
Oh,
and
flap
Mothman
their wings.
Doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, too, a crane wouldn't be able to pick up like a 30, 40, 50-pound child.
Right.
They're kind of frail themselves.
What year was that?
77?
70s, I think. 74?
So you said 76 and 77. 76 was England. And the child's name was Martin Lowe?
Yes. And that experience was actually something that got Lauren Coleman interested in cryptozoology.
And why was that?
He lived in the general area and was about the same age as this child.
Oh.
So he kind of grew up interested in the whole thing.
Okay, then you also make a connection central to the Point Pleasant story is the Low Hotel. Sort of a coincidental repetition of words, names, or whatever.
Right. There doesn't seem to be any familial connection at all.
And what is the connection of the Low Hotel to Mothman, or is there actually one, just that there's one in Point Pleasant?
They're both in Point Pleasant. And the Low is notoriously haunted. The things that happen there are so creepy.
Which I want to get to toward the end of the show. I want to pick your brain on that.
But yeah, we might want to go there.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
I would like to go to the festival, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
just
that would be fun. Yeah.
Knowing too late.
It's not the time to stay at the Low, though, because there's too many people.
Say that again, Robin?
That's not the time to go to the Low because there's too many people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go in the off season when you can actually experience everything.
And have it to yourself.
When things are normal.
Yeah. So is there a connection between Martin Low and the Low Hotel?
No.
Okay, just kind of a word repetition type thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and you see that a lot, actually, around Mothman things. The number 35.
Yeah.
The highway that goes through, well, it's not really a highway, but U.S. 35 goes through Point Pleasant, and at the time crossed the Silver Bridge and was pretty much the only east-west way you could get across the Ohio River in that area. And then, you know, fast forward several decades, and you have the Milwaukee Bridge collapse, and it was Interstate 35.
The Milwaukee Street? Bridge collapse?
Was it Milwaukee?
I don't know. I haven't heard of that.
It says Minneapolis. So
Minneapolis,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember all of these things, and it's just, there's so much in my head.
And then, US 35 and then I-35. That is very bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, and then the two roads are not anywhere close to each other. So it's not like it's a corridor.
And you also mentioned Muncie, Indiana. This isn't even Illinois or West Virginia. And that the road there is U.S. 35. I mean, that's three times.
Yes,
that's actually the same road that goes through Point Pleasant.
Do you know anything about the Muncie, Indiana sighting?
That I do not know. I know that there were several in Chicago, but I don't really know anything about Muncie. The most recent Chicago one, I think, was last Christmas.
And what was that about? Those sightings in Chicago.
I would love to go and see where this thing was.
Yeah.
You know, put it in context. I know a lot of the sightings out of that area were in public parks.
Ah.
And I'm wondering if that is just because there were trees. For instance,
I think that plays part of it. I think you're right there. I was talking to one of our guests from 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about parks like New York City Park, and I really feel that perhaps there are portals there, and I'm not sure why. It's just an intuitive thing, and I think that could be the same situation, nature.
Right.
Yeah.
We do have a text question from a listener who wants to know if after the bridge collapsed, did the sightings in Point Pleasant continue, or did they stop?
They stopped for a while.
Well, that's a yes and no. They stopped for a long time. But they still happen now and then.
Hmm.
In fact, there was a major rock slide on the Ohio side of the river about maybe 10 years ago. And there's a picture in the local paper of the rock slide, and standing on top of the hill, if you look really closely, is what looks like Mothman.
Gee whiz. Another thing I wanted to point out, too, getting back to Muncie, Indiana, again, the month of December, Chicago, the month of December, the bridge collapse in Point Pleasant, December.
I'm pretty sure there's some connection with weather, because some of the other sightings were in colder areas. And I'm wondering if December is actually about the temperature rather than the time.
Okay.
You see a lot of the sightings in mountainous areas in Europe and Asia, and I think, you know, because they're snow covered most of the year, I think that has something to do with it.
Well, what do you know about sightings in Asia?
I know that they tend to not believe that it's Mothman, but they do believe that it's something paranormal.
Or that it's some kind of a humanoid winged creature?
Yes. Kind of like a time traveler.
That's what they think.
Right.
Okay.
It's a very different culture in Asia.
Yeah.
Because they perceive things on a much more spiritual level than most of us. You tend to hear the stories told as, you know, angels, for instance, or, you know, something paranormal. And, you know, it's funny because I'm probably the only person in the world that doesn't think of Mothman as paranormal.
Well, wait a minute. Just because you think that he's probably more of a natural thing, it doesn't mean that he can't be interdimensional.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But by definition, paranormal means something that's outside of the norm. And because I grew up there, it was part of my norm.
Yeah, semantics, just semantics.
Yeah. My mom was an English major. You got to forgive me.
Okay, I'll buy that. So their take in India is that it's on a spiritual basis. Okay, I can
right.
understand
it's
that.
Right, it's much more spiritual than it is here.
All right, so let me just pick your brain. You think that it's natural, but you think that perhaps it's from an ancient strain of some kind of creature?
I do. I think much like Bigfoot, it's something that just kind of stuck around.
And maybe came, preceded humans.
Yes.
On the planet. You could be right. You know, the same thing is said about some of the cryptids, the canids, the upright dogmen.
Yep.
And let me see, it was in one of Linda Goodman's books. I believe it was from an episode in Maine where this man saw a canid in his bathroom or his bedroom, and it's telepathically sent him the message. When he asked who he was or what he was, he said that they were guardians of the earth and that they had preceded humans, and they were here to watch the earth. Caretaker. And I thought, that's really a pretty interesting take on that. And
it makes perfect sense.
It does make sense. It seems to be the only account that where that information was revealed, and that makes the most sense to me.
Well, and this is part of the problem with the Mothman movie. They have taken bits and pieces of other stories where the precognition and the silent talk are prevalent and attach them to Mothman. And it's not necessarily the same experience.
Yeah, Hollywood does do that. Mixes context to make a story.
And they couldn't even get the right number for the number of dead when the bridge fell, and that just really irritated me.
Yeah, stuff like that is very annoying. I mean, if you're going to make it based on a true story, then you have some truth in it.
Well, at least the respect for the people that died.
Truly.
You know, I understand why they didn't film it in Point Pleasant, but seriously, how hard is it to get the right number?
Yeah, to get your facts straight.
Although, interestingly, in the movie, 35 people died.
Wasn't it 46 in real life?
Yes.
In actuality, yeah.
But there's that number 35 again.
Yeah, you're right. They did settle on 35. That is interesting. Jeez. Well, then,
you know, Lauren Coleman has something called the Mothman Death List, I think it's called.
Okay, tell us about that. I know I've read of it, but if you'd talk about it again.
It is people who have experienced or are connected in some way to Mothman who die prematurely or unusually. And one of the connections to the movie was that the producer, I'm not exactly sure which, his wife had a brain aneurysm.
Oh.
Yeah, shortly after the movie came out. You know, and you know, people have died very suddenly. A lot of the Mothman witnesses from Point Pleasant have been stricken with cancer or killed in a car wreck or, you know, any number of things. According to Lauren, there may be a connection to that. I don't personally subscribe to that, although I got to be honest, when I got cancer, I was worried. But I'm not leaning towards that being accurate. I mean, people die and get in accidents all the time.
Yeah. It's hard to say. What about the connection with Mothman and what is it, the TNT, the storage of the chemicals area that they thought Mothman lived at or resided at for a while?
Yes, the TNT area, which is now a national wildlife refuge, was originally a ammunition factory area. And they had all of these concrete, they call them igloos. They're like a little hut.
Uh-huh.
And they're very, very sturdy. And that's where they stored the ammunition. And then when they moved all of that out, because we were done having war for a time, they left a lot of contamination behind.
Wow.
And it was a major cleanup site, and the Superfund got involved and everything. So I think people were kind of, they tended to believe that it was some kind of a mutant.
Yeah.
That, you know, that somebody had gone in there and came out of Mothman or something.
Now, wasn't that a nuclear storage facility?
No nukes.
It wasn't. Okay.
Just ammunition. Were they like Quonset huts? Is that what they were? Like big aluminum, like half crescent huts? You called it an igloo, which is basically the same?
They were concrete.
Oh, they were concrete. Okay.
Yeah, and they still are. They're still out there.
Yeah. Well, it does make you wonder if it is a mutation, maybe even the bird people type thing. Who knows?
Right.
But there were so many of them.
The problem with that theory is that Mothman has been seen way before that was even an ammunition place.
That's true. What do you think the connection might be to what Ken Gerhardt talks about as man, birds, or even gargoyles? Or I kind of think it might be different DNA, but what do you think?
I don't know about gargoyles, but I could see the man-bird stuff.
Yeah.
Spring-heeled Jack is often thought to be connected or the same as Mothman.
Well, the thing is, he didn't have wings, though. He wasn't spotted having wings, was he?
Well, we don't know. There are conflicting reports.
Oh, are there? Okay.
Yeah, and the ones that the media tend to get a hold of are the ones that are the scariest.
Yeah.
Also, the Jersey Devil.
Yeah.
That particular entity was known to fly.
That's right.
Yeah.
But was there a physical resemblance? I thought it looked more like a strange-looking bird rather than a humanoid.
That, again, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
What I saw was definitely man-shaped, extremely muscular.
Wow.
But didn't have a normal man face. Of course, I was six at the time, so
yeah.
Was
it tall?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Very, very tall.
And dark, like almost leathery skin, or something.
It could have been leathery, or it could even have been a smooth feather. But it was certainly not very textured. And if I remember correctly, it was more of a like a charcoal gray.
Mm-hmm. That would fit.
And there have been reports of all colors around the color black and gray. I don't think anything has ever been reported as non-dark.
Hmm.
But again, it's a matter of perspective. You know, if you have no frame of reference for what you're seeing, who knows?
Yeah. Well, Robin, we're at the bottom of the hour. What we're going to do is just take a quick break here, and then we're going to continue with this fascinating conversation about Mothman, so please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org. And let's go back to the phone. Tonight's guest, Robin Bellamy. Welcome back.
Welcome back, Robin.
Hi.
Okay, so before we leave the subject of Mothman directly here, you had written that he was also, it was reported, that he was seen just before 9/11.
Yes.
Now, where was that? Was it in Point Pleasant or was it in New York City?
It was actually right around the tower in the air.
Really?
There surfaced some photographs. I personally don't know if they've been debunked yet, but for all we know, that's what happened. And it was, you know, within 3 days of the collapse.
3 to 5 days, maybe? 35? Just kidding.
There you go.
That is very odd. I hadn't heard anything
really
about that.
He's really not a fun guy to have around.
Yeah, he seems like a real downer, huh? Jeez. And you also mentioned that after the bridge collapse, after the first few sightings of Mothman, that people started having increased paranormal experiences.
Yes.
Was it those that had seen him? Or just people in Point Pleasant in particular?
It was people in Point Pleasant in general and across the river in Gallup Bliss. It did not seem to be just happening to the witnesses. One of the big things was the poltergeist activity.
Really?
And, you know, because West Virginia has a Scots-Irish history, poltergeists are really not that unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But the sheer number of experiences in that time frame is staggering. And people who would not normally even report them, you know, ministers and town officials and things like that, these people were having poltergeist experiences as well. And then, of course, the Men in Black.
Truly?
Oh, yeah. The woman who broke the story, who was the news reporter, I believe in Athens, Ohio, she was one of the first people to experience these Men in Black. And it was kind of, it became kind of normal to see them walking down the street.
I hadn't heard that.
You can see them at the Mothman Festival, too.
No.
Not real ones, of course.
Are you saying actual ones or people dressed up, you know, mimicking?
They're dressed up.
Okay.
Or they could be either.
They could
no,
be.
No, I know the guys that do it, and they're definitely not Men in Black.
Well, maybe there's some that are more secretive and you know, covert. Maybe.
The closest I ever came to having a visit from Men in Black, a friend of mine, well, a colleague, actually, she and I were both working in paranormal. We were having coffee one day, and this very strange guy came in and was all in black, and just looked at us.
Mm.
It was very weird, and that was up here in Toronto.
Really?
Mm.
So, you know, it kind of made me a little freaked out, actually.
So, would you just stare at you to get a cup of coffee or eat or just walk out?
He just walked out. He stood there for at least 5 minutes, five full minutes, just staring at us.
He just came in, stared at you for 5 minutes, and then walked out?
Yep.
Wow.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
It was very intimidating.
I would think so, yeah.
Now, were you facing him? Did your friend have his back to him?
No, she and I both were. Oh. He was at our side. I mean, we could both.
Oh, okay.
Him.
Ooh, geez. And nobody she recognized, right?
Nope, nobody she recognized. And you know, the dark glasses and the whole nine yards.
So peculiar. And what
this
had you...
a rather high-end coffee shop in a rather high-end area of this area, and, you know, it's not like you'd see cosplay going on.
What had you just done?
Exactly. What had you just done was going to be my question. What had you been involved in?
We were in the middle of an investigation of an upright creature. We just call him the Marked Monster because we don't know what he is.
Hmm.
And he's, you know, a large bipedal something that shows up along the Rouge River in this area. It has been seen in a couple of different conservation areas. So there's a little bit of a link, but not, you know, directly.
Well, how is he described?
How is which described?
This creature that you had been working on before you had your Men in Black sighting.
He's described as tall and heavy and muscular. At first, the witness thought it was a bear. I mean, you're in Canada, you know.
They're husky looking, though.
but he didn't behave like a bear. You know, he came up, at one point, he came up out of a snowbank. Just kind of raised up out of the snow.
Well, is it more like a Sasquatch?
I would lean more towards that. But, he's such a fleeting thing. First of all, that he exists, and also to be someplace where there are also witnesses.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with the cryptids that are out in the wild, it's so rare to get actual believable reports.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, usually they don't have cameras with them.
How tall did you say it was?
I'm sorry?
How tall did you say it was?
The witness says it was between 6 and 8 feet tall.
Oh, okay.
And completely upright. And bears don't usually stay upright.
No, not for any length of time. And it was walking. It was bipedal.
Yeah, and we do have a fair amount of Sasquatch reports, even down this far south in Ontario. A lot of them up in the northern...
Where it's really desolate. But don't you suppose these witnesses would have heard of Sasquatch? Or were they totally unaware of that creature?
Sasquatch. Everybody had heard of him.
So did they make a connection?
Probably maybe 15 years ago. So, you know, everybody's pretty much aware.
Of what they are. So...
They didn't think it was a Sasquatch. They didn't know what it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
Apparently it's not hairy.
Oh, that adds a whole different dimension to that.
Does.
That's peculiar. That's probably why the MIB was there checking you out.
Well,
I've got it solved.
Me lately, which is a good thing. I have a funny story. Do we have time for a quick story?
Yeah, please.
My apartment is on the 8th floor, and my office window looks out over a train track.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a day that this black helicopter came flying down the train track, very, very low. I mean, eye level to me.
Mm.
And I couldn't find any number on it. And it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
My first husband was in the Marine Corps. I know a lot about airplanes. And this happened several times. So finally, I called the local airports, and I eventually found one about a driving distance, about 45 minutes from me. Turns out Donald Trump was in town.
Oh, really?
And his helicopter, the numbers are painted navy blue on the black helicopter.
You can't see him that well.
Right.
Okay.
It was really, it freaked me out a lot.
I can understand. How long ago was that?
Oh.
After 2016?
No, it was well before that.
Oh, okay.
Like 2005 or something.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you solved that mystery.
I always like it when they have an answer.
Yes, I know. A natural answer. So let's get into the Mothman Festival a little bit. That's going to be this weekend, the 21st and the 22nd of September.
Yes,
and
Sunday.
I wanted to ask you, had you ever met Faye DeWitt, who was one of the experiencers or witnesses of Mothman? Had you ever talked to her?
I've met Faye. She's extremely believable. I've also met, I'm trying to think of the other woman's name. She's passed now. My brain is turned off.
Where did Faye see the Mothman?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where did Faye see the Mothman? Where was she at? Was it the TNT area?
No, she was in town. A lot of people saw Mothman on their roofs and things.
Mm.
And I believe that's where she saw hers.
Was that like sort of preceding the bridge collapse, or was it?
Yes, that was preceding the bridge collapse.
How about Rosemary Ellen Guiley? You know, I'm not sure if everybody's aware of it, but she passed just a few months ago. What was her stand on the Mothman?
Rosemary was always very middle of the road.
Okay.
She tended to address the more spiritual things like ghosts and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she absolutely believed in the Mothman.
Okay.
But I think she tended to think it was more time travel or reincarnation or something that was more than a biological creature.
Hmm.
They're doing a wonderful tribute to her, by the way, Saturday at 2 o'clock, which was when she
nice.
Was scheduled to speak.
Mm.
And the speakers are going to do a panel tribute.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, she wrote quite a few books, so she had some knowledge under her belt.
Oh, yeah, and she was always at the Mothman Festival. Now, she and I have been going there almost since its beginning.
Really? And you know that you mentioned 12,000 attendees yes. is what they're expecting?
That's what they're expecting. They've consistently had at least 10,000 the last 2 or 3 years.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, and it's incredibly crowded.
I imagine. How the heck do the hotels handle it?
Well, you can't get a hotel booked. If you don't have one already, you can forget it. You're going to drive at least an hour.
You're going to have to stay with a friend.
Yeah. And in fact, when I booked my hotel in, I think it was March or April, the closest I could get was Ripley, West Virginia, which is about a 40-minute drive.
Oh, geez. That's not real convenient.
Most of the people who book for the low hotel right in town do so right after January 1st.
Yep. Now, how about researcher, UFO researcher and author Brent Rains? What I liked about him, I've never heard of him before, but he's a UFO researcher, but he also keeps John Keel's legacy alive. So he's very interested in stuff of high strangeness. Yes. What do you know of him?
I actually had not heard of him either.
Mm.
One of the things about the Mothman Festival is that they are very good about giving the lesser-known folks a chance to talk.
Well, that's nice.
They've had some bigger names, but one of the things that they really like to do is give people who are newly published or have just kind of developed a reputation. Brian Seach is one. Brian has done a little bit of TV, but he's not, you know, he's not a household word.
Not well known, yeah.
Extremely knowledgeable.
Mm.
And it's wonderful that this festival is always good about giving, I call them newbies.
Yeah.
Although Brian is not in any way a newbie.
Well, nobody charges for this thing either. It's just the vendors, right? So.
Right.
Yeah.
The hayride, I think, costs $5.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But those will sell out fast as well.
So in other words, they're probably not paying these speakers anyway, right?
Oh, of course not.
It would be nice if they, you know, charge a real minimum fee. And
I can't remember the last time I got paid to be a speaker anywhere.
Really?
Once in a while, they'll comp you the
traveling expenses, like, gas.
Hotel room.
Yeah. Gee whiz, Robin.
It's certainly a labor of love.
It is, isn't it? Same thing with a ghost hunting, but you already knew that.
Oh, yeah.
So this Brian Seach, he's going to do a presentation on winged entities from antiquity to present day. That's really apropos. I was wondering what else. Do you know anything more about what he's researched?
I know he does a lot of UFO work.
Oh.
I know he also does some Bigfoot stuff.
Hmm.
I think that the serious researchers will research whatever they can get their hands on.
I was wondering if if his thoughts run in tandem about the winged entities and their origins. But we don't know, do we? Unless he's got a book out.
Opinion.
Hmm?
I'm not sure he's actually formed an opinion. I think like most of us who do this from a scientific point of view.
Just present the facts.
Right, just present the facts. And Steve Ward, too. Steve is incredibly talented researcher, has been at the Mothman Festival since I can remember, and he's the same way. He presents the facts and pretty much lets you decide what to do with those facts.
Yeah, I hadn't heard these people, but if I were there, they certainly did pique my interest.
Okay.
I'd love to go sometime.
You really should. It's an experience that if you're into this sort of thing, it's definitely something you need to do. And it's not just those of us who are kind of dry and scientific. They have a cosplay area. A bunch of people dress up like Ghostbusters.
It's
difficult. This year they've added Star Wars to their cosplay. You can get a Mothman latte.
Oh.
You can get a Mothman pancake. The local pizzeria, which is the same one that was there during the 60s that everybody hung out at, they have a Mothman pizza all year round.
That'll please the kids.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the vendors, of course, have everything you could possibly think of.
Yeah, and, I wonder where they get that stuff. That stuff that's always geared toward, like, the Exeter UFO Festival. They've got all kinds of trinkets there.
Yep.
Makes you wonder. Okay, now I want to leave some time to talk about your book, which is Haunted Hospitality. How long have you had that out?
Oh, that's been out a while. That was actually my second book.
Oh. What's your first?
My first one was a cookbook.
Oh, okay. Well, haunted cookbook, wasn't it, kind of?
Yeah, it was. It
yeah.
was stories of hauntings and a recipe that had something to do with them.
However, did you find those recipes with a connection?
Yeah, it was interesting. First, I found the ghost stories. For instance, for some reason, Pizza Hut is notoriously haunted all over the country.
Really?
Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut. Yeah, I know. That was my reaction. Pizza Hut. But there have been several reported hauntings in several Pizza Huts in the U.S. So, of course, it comes with a recipe for pizza.
Well, then, how did you become aware of that? Well, what was your source to find out about nationwide Pizza Huts?
Well, the internet, of course.
Haunted Pizza Huts?
Yeah.
Is that what you Googled?
I'm wondering if that's why a lot of the Pizza Huts around here are closing.
Yeah, that's a thought, Willie.
They're all going to carry out here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of sad, actually, because I you remember they used to have a lunch buffet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I like Pizza Hut.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why they're haunted. One of the other stories is about Hawaii, hauntings in Hawaii, and the big thing that people in Hawaii eat, believe it or not, is Spam.
Spam.
Really?
Yep, so there's a really good recipe in there for a Spam casserole that you would never guess was good.
Oh, I bet it is. Spam does taste.
If it's got Spam, it's got to be good.
It is tasty. Not that it's the best stuff for you, but...
It has... that mixed fruit stuff that comes in a can. What is it called? Fruit cocktail.
Oh.
And it has yams.
Yams?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, so what's the name of that first book again?
Haunt Cuisine.
Haunted Cuisine?
Just Haunt.
Oh, Cuisine. Haunt Cuisine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Haunted Hospitality is... a very specific nonfiction reference book for people who are interested in the hauntings at the Lowe Hotel in Point Pleasant. And what I did was I collected the stories that people left, because they have a book and you can write your story in the book.
Okay.
And there, you know, before the current owners had it, way, way back, there were reports of hauntings. So what I did was I researched who these people might be. And one of them is a child who rides a tricycle down the hallway. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. Who would have a tricycle in a hotel? And then I discovered that one of the families that owned the hotel had children the right age and lived in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's got to be her.
Yeah.
One of the ghosts dances on the mezzanine in what appears to be a nightgown. So I thought, well, who in the world could that be? So I went back to the first sighting, and it coincides with the recent death of one of the children of one of the owners. And the owner had been very strict and didn't allow music and didn't allow, you know, anything fun. and so it would make sense that his teenage daughter would dance at night.
And then she passed away.
Yep, yep. And then, of course, there's the famous Captain Bob sighting.
And who's Captain Bob?
He was a riverboat captain.
Oh.
And showed up in what is now the large suite at the hotel. But when the hotel was originally designed and opened, that particular wing of the hotel was reserved for river workers. and they would come in, like if the boats got stuck in ice jams or something like that, or were in for, you know, maintenance, mm-hmm. the crew would come and stay in this area of the hotel. Then I found out that Mr. Lowe owned one of those boats. And I went to the archives in West Virginia, and they have a whole section on riverboat captains, and there was a guy whose picture was available, and the witness said that was who she saw. And he was the captain of Mr. Lowe's boat.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yep. Jim, I guess his name was, not Bob. Captain Jim.
So it sounds like at least all the ghosts there are friendly. Friendly spirits.
Unnerving, but friendly.
Have you seen anything there, Robin?
Yes, actually I have.
Okay, what?
I am one of the captain witnesses.
Oh.
And we were in that suite, actually, and we were packing up to leave, and we had a clock radio, the kind that you plug in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sitting in the hallway of the suite, and we were packing up things. And all of a sudden, this radio started broadcasting a Christian network. Which is, and there's two things interesting about that. First of all, there weren't any Christian networks at the time. And, of course, being FM, it shouldn't have been able to be picked up because only AM signals travel long distances.
Okay.
The other interesting thing was that radio wasn't plugged in.
Oh, really?
Okay.
So you thought that it was Captain Bob or Jim, Captain Jim, or did you see anything?
No, I saw an actual full-body apparition in that suite.
And where was he? What was he doing? What was he wearing?
He was wearing captain's garb, which I didn't actually immediately recognize because it was different than what I would normally think of as a boat captain. It was like a double-breasted suit. It looked more like a band uniform, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hmm. Was it like a steamboat then?
Yes.
Okay. And so what period? Late 1800s, 1880s?
Probably more early 1900s.
Oh, okay.
1920, maybe 30.
And what was he doing?
He was standing looking out the window at the river.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, because I was already an established researcher at the time and I was speaking at the festival, I thought that the owner of the hotel was playing a prank.
And an actor, perhaps a reenactor?
Right. I thought maybe she'd let somebody into my suite and, you know, ha, ha, ha. So I went downstairs and I was very shaken because by that time I realized it wasn't a person. And I asked her about it. And she said, I think you need to have a cup of coffee.
Calm your nerves.
Yes.
So he was solid? He was opaque?
He was opaque. I don't know if I would say solid necessarily, but certainly enough to initially make me think he was a living human being.
And
then I realized he didn't have any legs.
Oh, jeez.
He was standing kind of behind the side of a chair. You know,
okay.
The big overstuffed armchairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was between the arm of the chair and the window, kind of, you know, not facing me face on. So I didn't really immediately realize that he didn't have any legs. And when I did, I started to back up. And my video camera was right behind me. So I took one step back, and I very quickly turned and grabbed the camera and turned back, and he was gone. I was so mad.
Oh, yeah. No acknowledgement from him, of you?
Well, he spoke to me. We had a conversation, actually.
Okay, what?
I said, what are you doing in my room? And he said, I'm waiting for the ship. And I said, what ship? And he said, the one that's going to dock. And I said, okay. And the area below that window is now the amphitheater. It's a huge over-the-water concrete amphitheater. It's
mm-hmm.
a wonderful, wonderful thing. And when we got up the next morning, there was a boat docked there.
Hmm.
What?
A riverboat?
Well, it's somebody's pleasure boat. It's like a big yacht type.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, when I had gone downstairs to talk to the owner, I said, you know, do anything about a boat that's supposed to be docked? Because sometimes, like, the Mississippi Queen and stuff will come down.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, there's not anything due. And besides, you know, that's not really a boat dock. It's got some tie-offs, but it's not, you know, set up to be a boat dock.
Did she say it used to be a boat dock?
No, it never was.
Oh, okay.
There was one in that area, but it was not ever. What's there now was never part of, you know, what was a boat dock.
Were you communicating with him telepathically, or were you speaking with him?
No, we were speaking. It was audible. In fact, you know, my husband wondered, you know, who I was talking to.
Could he hear who you were talking to?
I'm sorry?
Could he hear who you were talking to?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Oh,
you both heard
him. So he heard him. Did he see him?
No, And he's a huge non-believer. So, and it wasn't until the radio came on that he started thinking, okay, maybe there's something to this.
Because then he checked that it wasn't plugged in.
Right.
Oh, that's an amazing sighting.
Denial.
And what?
Yeah. Now he's just kind of in denial.
Yeah.
But I'm actually a ghost in my apartment who, I call it bringing my work home with me. And she loves to pull pranks on him. One time she tied his shoestrings together.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun.
And he's never going to believe that wasn't you.
Yeah.
Oh, he knows it wasn't me because I never left my room. I have an office at the other end of the apartment, and this happened while I was in there.
Mm. Oh, goodness.
She moves his notepads and stuff around. It's really quite funny.
Do you think this is a person that you dragged home with you or that followed you home from one of your investigations?
I do. I was researching theaters at one point, and this particular ghost appears to be a silent movie star who was not allowed to do talkies because she had a very deep Southern accent. And I, you know, researched her and then found her daughter on Facebook.
Really?
And started asking her questions because, you know, the EVP would provide commentary. And one of the things that I was supposed to ask her daughter was what her favorite what the mother's favorite drink was. And I'm thinking, okay, this has got to be, you know, an alcoholic drink. I mean, it's Hollywood. But apparently it was milk, and that was the answer that she had given me.
Milk?
My daughter confirmed it. Milk, yeah.
Oh, my, that's amazing. Did you get any visuals on her?
No.
Oh, goodness. So are you writing another book? Are you in the process of writing?
Actually, I just published another cookbook. It's called Southern Belle Night, which is, it's called Proper Cooking for Yankees. And it's got a running commentary about what it's like to be a Southern girl north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Ah.
And that one just came out in April.
Oh, congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
Jeez. Now, you've got another presentation coming up in Ohio, October 2nd, was it?
I think it's the 6th.
Oh, okay.
Of October. It's the Gift of Light Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such wonderful people there that I have to go. I just have to. I'm only up to doing one day, so I'll have one discussion on the Saturday. But I'm going to work myself up to be in both days again sometime.
So what is your topic? Wasn't it creatures, legends, and myths or something like that?
Oh, I have spoken about that. I think this year is going to be dead relatives.
Oh.
Okay. It's kind of a merging of the paranormal and the genealogical.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. Gee whiz, that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's my request.
Good luck on that presentation, and I hope you have fun this weekend.
Oh, I will.
Oh, terrific. Yeah. And
maybe one of these years we'll run into you down there.
I hope so.
Or just come up and visit. I'll show you the Markham Monster.
Love it. Would love to get down there. Your website or do you just have a Facebook page?
I do. It's I think it's I Tried It, I-T-R-I-E-D-I-T. Or you can find it through my regular Facebook, Robin Pyatt Bellamy.
Okay, and then of course you're the blogger on the Fortean cryptozoology site. Do you want to give that out?
That is CFZ, Center for Fortean Zoology, -canada.blogspot.com.
Okay, and you cover cryptozoology things. And some of the researchers, and there have been some fantastic researchers that have done a lot of work.
Oh, yes. We've had a wonderful history here.
Yeah, especially focusing on Sasquatch and whatnot, with some evidence that one of them was told, was it Peter Byrne? He was told that his evidence was of deer family origin, but they kept the information secret for 40 years.
Yep.
And the thing is, deers aren't secret, so why did they do that? Probably because it's a lie.
One of my ongoing cases right now is with some kind of a creature that comes to a local reserve, native reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a cloved-footed,
really?
Upright human being-looking thing.
Has he been spotted, like, more than once?
Oh, yeah. For apparently generations.
Is that local there around Toronto area?
It's about an hour and a half from me.
Hmm. And
we try to take a team out a couple of times a year and get what we can. So far, the only thing we found is footprints.
So is he feared?
Yes, they are.
Or is it feared? This cloven-hooved creature? We're having sightings of him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't sound good.
Well, it's mostly the kids that are telling us, which is interesting because they're not supposed to talk to us.
Oh, really? These are Native American children, you're saying, right?
The tribal elders are not too happy that this has come to light.
Ah.
Which is why I don't give a lot of details about where it is.
Yeah.
There's several reserves around me.
Well, they must know something that white man isn't willing to believe in anyway, so that's probably why they don't want to be ridiculed, for one thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, we're running over a little bit on time, Robin, so best we wrap this up. Is there anything else you wanted to add real quickly?
Nope. We should do this again.
Oh, you're darn right.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know, it would be nice to get a report on the festival from this weekend eventually.
Sure. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Great.
Okay, well, good luck with all three of your books, and
thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay, Robin, thank you very much for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience.
And thanks, everyone, for listening, and you have a good evening. You have been listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Granite Sky is proud to serve the Granite State, New England, and the world via the Internet with rock-solid support and personal services. There are many aspects to ufology, and the experiencer is too often overlooked. At Granite Sky, their focus is on people, not proof. Granite Sky focuses on supporting those who have had extraterrestrial encounters and abduction experiences. We believe no one should have to face these experiences alone. If you've been visited, visit them at www.granitesky.org.